And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to a special edition of the Athletic NBA Show. I'm your host, Andrew Schlecht. With me today, a man who covers a historically horrific basketball team. It's my guy, James Edwards III in Detroit. James, are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. I think the hardest part is just coming up with, like, you just feel like you've written everything under the sun at this point, right?
Yeah. So you wrote a great piece that went up on The Athletic a couple days ago that really just detailed, like, how did we get here? How did this happen to the Detroit Pistons, who, you know, throughout a lot of, like, my childhood, like, were pretty good and then, like, awesome, you know, in like the early aughts, and now it's just like the only reason they're in the news is for losing. Can you give like a brief summary? And I think to me the point is, like, a lot of people will look at Detroit and say, well, why can't they just be like Oklahoma City or Orlando or, you know, whoever else in this process? I want you to like at least like defend like why it's even like reasonable that they wouldn't be exactly on pace with them. But then we can talk about the other stuff too, but like, just give like a bird's eye view of your story. And then we can kind of talk about like how the rebuild has kind of gone wrong.
Yeah. So for sure. So since the 2008, I think it was 2008. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. Yeah. 2008, the Pistons had just, November of 2008, so that the season before, they had just got to the Eastern Conference Finals for the third straight year and had lost. Prior to that, they lost to the Spurs in the NBA Finals, won the NBA Finals. Like, they were almost the team of the 2000s in a way, right? Like, they were, if you were born in the early 90s like me or late 80s, like, the Pistons were the team of one of the teams of the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. So clearly, it got a bit stale there. They trade Chauncey Billups for Allen Iverson, still make the playoffs, but it's like clearly a pivot's happening. They go 39-43, get swept. Iverson leaves. Rasheed Wallace goes to Boston. It's time to rebuild. They rebuild around Rodney Stuckey.
Yeah.
And then sign Ben Gordon and Charlie Villanueva. Mm-hmm. The team doesn't win more than 32 games the next four or five seasons. The draft picks from 09 to 15 include Austin Day, Greg Monroe, Brandon Knight, Andre Drummond, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and Stanley Johnson.
Yeah, that list, when I read that list, I was like, boy. And you can,
it's rough, right?
Because like in a vacuum, like, some of those aren't bad. Like, KCP's good, but not in the top 10. You know,
right, exactly. And even with that, it also just kind of signals they were always bad, but not bad enough, right?
Yeah.
Austin Day was number 15, Monroe was number 7, Knight was number 8, Drummond number 9, Pope number 8, Stanley Johnson number 7. Mm-hmm. And outside of Andre and Kentavious, and you can make the case for that Andre falls into this, but I'm going to respect Andre's career a little bit more, but four of the six names I mentioned were either barely hanging on in the league or out of the league by 28.
Yeah.
So there's a six-year period where they basically are just not getting any bang for their buck from first-round picks. In there, they draft Chris Middleton, great pick, but get impatient and trade him after his rookie year for Brandon Jennings. They had Spencer Dinwiddie, another great pick. Middleton and Dinwiddie are, if you're a draft guy, like, two guys that people thought had first-round grades, but both had, like, bad knee injuries in college.
Yep.
He bumped heads with Van Gundy and was traded for a guy named Cameron Bairstow, who is better served as a trivia question nowadays.
Yeah.
So there's that. Just poor drafting, right?
Yeah.
And then what happens is they get a good break, I guess, where Stan Van Gundy comes in. The poor drafting continues, but he does well with trades. He gets, as you know, Andrew, gets Reggie Jackson for basically nothing.
Yep.
And Reggie gets to Detroit, and he looks really good. They're out of the playoff picture at that point, but it's basically set up for next year. Sign Marcus Morris, or trade for Marcus Morris that summer. End up trading for Tobias Harris around the next trade deadline, and this team wins 44 games, makes the playoffs. They got swept by the Cavs, but if people remember, that was like all four games were competitive. It was very similar to like the Nuggets and Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very good series. But you kind of just feel like things are brewing. And then it gets bad. Cap spike 2016 comes. Pistons used a good chunk of theirs to sign John Lewar to a $42 million a year contract, 4 years. Langston Galloway to a 3-year, $21 million contract. Boban Marjanovic to the same deal as Galloway.
Yeah.
So now they're locked in. Reggie Jackson gets hurt in back-to-back years. Obviously, people have thoughts on Reggie Jackson, but very clearly he is like at least a winning player, and mm-hmm. things change because of his injury history. Then Van Gundy and them start feeling pressure. They make the trade for Blake Griffin. Blake Griffin, as everybody knows, had a great year and a half in Detroit. You can make the case his 18-19 All-NBA season was the best year of his career. But even that, the Pistons made the playoffs on the last day of the regular season. His knee failed him, continued to fail him, and then they had to completely tear down. And this is where, well, in that period too, in 2015, the Pistons were deciding between Stanley Johnson and Devin Booker. Those were the two it was down to. They picked Stanley Johnson. They selected Henry Ellenson after the lottery in 2018, but he was out of the league by 24. Yeah. And then they took Kennard over Donovan Mitchell. Luke Kennard, good NBA player, not Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah.
And then the pick that they used to get Blake Griffin ended up being Miles Bridges, who was then traded for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Yeah.
So, missteps along the way. And if you're
Detroit, you just kind of need one of those to not be bad. Yes. You know? Like a lot of teams become good just because, like, they make one decision like that where they just, like, almost like flip a coin. And it's like, okay, we got Devin Booker. Or, okay, we got Donovan Mitchell. You know, it happened with Utah. I mean, you look at Utah, the things that had happened to that franchise, especially like Gordon Hayward leaving, you kind of thought, and that was summer 2016. You just thought, okay, well, it's kind of over for them. They end up getting Donovan Mitchell. They end up getting Rudy Gobert in like the late first round. Like somebody just is going to pop. Like just by just the NBA happening around you and you even just like making any kind of decision, like something good will come of it, except for with Detroit in this era. Yes. It's kind of unbelievable.
It's insane. It's terribly unlucky, but that's why you shouldn't leave things up to luck, right?
Yeah.
But to get to your point and to end my spiel here, how we got here today is when the Pistons, when you asked how are they not OKC, how are they not Orlando, the big difference is when they started their rebuild, they had nothing of significant value to trade.
Mm-hmm.
So their three pillars at the time they decided were Reggie Jackson, Andre Drummond, and Blake Griffin. In total for those three, the Pistons got John Henson, Brandon Knight, a second-round pick, and dead money. So that's how the Pistons started their rebuild.
Yeah, brutal. Because, I mean, you look at Oklahoma City, obviously, like they had the Paul George and Westbrook trades. You look at Orlando, like they had the Vooch trade.
And Aaron Gordon.
Yeah, and Aaron Gordon trades. Like there were these moments that shifted the rebuild in a positive direction, whereas like Detroit's like starting from ground zero. And yet, like, they still had some luck along the way. Like, getting the number one pick in the Cade Cunningham draft was big. Cade having some bad luck injury-wise has been rough. Is there any, like, question within, like, the Detroit, like, fan base or community whether Cade was the right guy or not? Because the way that I look at it is I kind of feel bad for Cade because I feel like this team is not built for him to be successful. But I don't know if you feel the same way or, like, the fan base feels the same way.
Oh yeah, I feel the same way. The fan base feels the same way. And the last half of this losing streak, he's been like phenomenal.
Yeah.
The first half, though, like he'll be the first to tell you he played a part in why they lost so many games too. Mm-hmm. He was turning the ball over, but again, I would say that they weren't playing with the greatest amount of space at that time. And also to go with that, and I mentioned luck. Like they got lucky with Caden. Like other than the Victor draft, that's the draft you going into it you wanted number one, right?
Yeah, definitely.
but they've also been bad the last 4 years and haven't picked higher than five. Mm-hmm. So they haven't, again, relying on luck has hurt them.
Yeah, that's part of the game. When you are a team that decides we're going to lose, you have to live with whatever happens in the lottery. Like, you have to be aware that you can fall as far as five, even if you have the worst record, which the Pistons did last year.
Yep, it's a coin flip.
Yeah, it is. It is literally a coin flip. That's like what the odds actually are.
Yeah, I think it's, what is it, 52-48 or 58-42 or something like that.
Yeah,
it's a coin flip.
Yeah,
for one through three, and then four and five or whatever it is.
Yep. James, I sat with you October 30th. I don't know if you ever think about this, but as I've been watching this, I think about this all the time. Little did we know that was going to be the first of 27 losses that night in Oklahoma City. And we were sitting there. The Pistons were 2-1. They had a winning record.
Away from being 3-0.
Yeah.
They almost beat Miami opening night.
Yes, that's right. They almost beat Miami. And we're sitting there. We're having dinner in the media room down there in OKC.
Brett Dawson. Shout out to Brett Dawson.
Shout out Brett Dawson.
Shout out Tumbleson.
Shout out Matt Tumbleson. We're all sitting there chatting it up. And we're just like, it feels different. It feels different for Detroit. They had looked pretty good. I mean, Asar Thompson was somebody he was kind of like the talk of the league, the way that he was playing.
Jalen Duren.
Duren was great. You know, Isaiah Stewart had started off the season pretty good. You know, Killian Hayes was starting, and people still kind of like raise their eyebrows at that one a little bit. But things were working just fine. Alec Burks was playing well off the bench. Everything seemed good. What happened? Like, is it because sometimes, and Barkley says this, that like some bad teams don't know they're bad at the beginning of the season. Is it a case of that, or is there like something else that happened that like started this whole 27 game losing streak?
Yep. So in my mind, there is, and again, it can't be scientifically proven, right? But it was after I saw you, the Oklahoma City. Like, I think that game was closer than it was. Like, final score. Like, I think Oklahoma City handled them pretty well. And but that wasn't a game that was like, again, as we've learned, Oklahoma City's on a different level.
Yeah. They literally just had a better first quarter. They outscored them 33-21 in the first quarter. But then it's bizarre to actually look at the box score. I was looking at it this morning. 26-26 in the second quarter, 32-32 in the third quarter, 33-33 in the fourth quarter. Like, it was really.
Really? Was that close?
Yeah. The box score is bizarre because they won by 12. But it's because they won the first quarter by 12.
Okay. And that's kind of been the Pistons' story. They lost to Brooklyn the other night because they lost the second quarter by 13.
Mm-hmm.
But back to your thing, again, cannot be scientifically proven, but I'm a good feeler of vibes. It was the next game when we got back from Oklahoma City against Portland, to me, that like started this whole thing. It was like, okay, we lost to Oklahoma City. That's a good team, whatever. Like, how do you bounce back? Because the good teams bounce back.
Yeah.
And they were up 18 against Portland late in that second quarter. And they had a 15-point lead early in that third.
Mm-hmm.
They lost the game by 10. And turnovers, fouls. Like, then you get in the locker room. And it was maybe the first time in a long time for me. And I've covered a lot of losing. But that was the one where you walked in and it felt like somebody passed away.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it was about that game specifically, but to me, in my head and talking to people, it was like, I thought we were over this. Like, I thought we were done, like, shooting ourselves in the foot. I thought we could hold a 15-point lead versus a bad team. Like, I thought we were, like, entering that echelon. And it just hasn't been the same since that game. There are games here and there they've almost won. They crumbled late, or they had a bad first quarter that, like, it's interesting because – and I'm not going to sit here and say they'd be a good team if not for the injuries. And I know everybody's tired of hearing about the injuries, but like, I'm of the belief that like, if Bojan Bogdanovic didn't make his season return 2 weeks ago, we're not talking about this losing streak. Do I think they're good still? No.
Yeah.
We're not talking about this losing streak.
They're just normal bad.
They're just normal bad. Monte Morris, like, as minuscule as it sounds to your average NBA fan.
Yeah.
If you've watched the Pistons turn the ball over like they lose change.
Yeah.
Monte Morris has long been the best assist to turnover ratio point guard in the NBA. Like, that helps. So what it looks like to me is the Portland loss, and it started, like you said, it starts with Oklahoma City, but I started at Portland because they should have won that game. Like, it was a complete meltdown.
Mm-hmm.
They lost that game, and then they look up and like two losses in a row turn into six turn into eight, and it's like, holy shit, like, what happened and like how do we get out of this? Because it's a bunch of young guys asked to do something they've never done before, which is win. And then the psychological aspect trickles into that. But I mean, there's other things too, like they don't shoot the ball well, the bench has been atrocious, the roster could be better balanced. Like there's other things that play into it, but I agree with you, the swagger that they had. The team I watched the first 3.5 games ain't the same team I've been watching the last month and a half, like swagger and vibe wise. And it's not that they dislike each other, it's just like they were locking teams up that first week. Like I think Miami only scored 103 in one, Charlotte scored under 100, LaVine scored 51, but they still beat the Bulls by like 14 or 15. Like they were locking teams up. There's just, and it just was never the same after Portland.
Yeah, and some of that was Asar was really, really good to start the season. And in this last game against Brooklyn, like he comes off the bench and just barely plays. Can you tell me about that dynamic? He played 8 minutes and 31 seconds. Can you tell me about that dynamic? Because it seemed like, oh, like they've really hit on somebody. I mean, the talk within the first like couple weeks was like, oh, they're, you know, they're, even when they started losing, oh, they're losing, but like, you know, they've got Cade. You know, they've got Asar. And like he is slowly like, pulled him out of starting lineup. Now he's like somehow behind Kevin Knox. Like what's going on here?
Yeah, it's interesting. Like he's still, I don't know if he's shell shocked or if he's still, it's just like the book's out on him and teams are figuring stuff. Like obviously we all know he couldn't shoot.
Yeah.
And teams are leaving him open. Mm-hmm. And that's been a big part of it. Even defensively though, like, well, I still think he's like going to make several all defense teams at some point. There was an issue with fouling, like a lot of fouling. And then it's like, okay, I don't want to foul. Then it's like he lost his aggressiveness that made him special. And he struggled to find the balance of still being. And I think part of that comes with like earning the respect of the officials, right? Like if the Pistons were a good team and Asar was playing the way he has, like I don't think we're seeing as much fouls on him. But that is part of the problem, like finding the balance of being not fouling and being an aggressive defender, like maintaining what makes you special. And he lost, I think, all the fouls kind of like, not that he's has been bad defensively, but like he just wasn't what he was. And I think he'll get there, but it's, of course, they're in a weird funk. But yeah, he needs to tighten his handle. When he gets into space, like he can lose a ball a little bit, but he finishes well in transition. But yeah, I think they're just in a situation now where they're trying to emphasize spacing with the little bit that they do have. And he also has been dealing with an illness the last week or so. So I don't know if maybe that played into it, but
yeah. Okay. Yeah,
much different. He played with I think one of the Pistons' issues the last few weeks is like, they don't make anybody feel him.
Yeah.
And I thought the first couple weeks of the season, like led by Asar and Stu and JD, like people felt them.
Yeah.
Like they were physical and they kind of lost that.
Yeah. And I feel a little bit like he's not exactly being put in the right position. Some of that's like roster construction. Like it's just some of it's, we talk about like it being unfair to Cade, maybe even more unfair to Asar because it's tough to put like non-shooting bigs at all times around him. And like, there's no place for him to drive. There's no place for him to kind of create. Cause that's kind of what he can do a little bit with the ball in his hands. He doesn't get the ball. They camp him in the corner and then they basically just shrink the floor.
Yeah.
And they're like, please pass the ball to him. So that he will panic and not know what to do with it. And then, like, that's it. But I think there's an awesome player in there. I think back to Domantas Sabonis. Not that they're similar players at all, but, like, to the psychological aspect of the NBA. Well, the NBA is so hard. is so hard. And I think Domas was put in a position in Oklahoma City his rookie season that was not good for his game. And I think it was really tough for him to play with Russell his first year, especially with like what they were trying to accomplish that year. I think it was really hard for him. And I think Asar may be in a similar position where it's like he's not being put in a position to succeed. He's being asked to do things that he's not particularly good at. And you look at Domas's rookie year, the dude averaged 5 points and 3 rebounds his first year in the NBA. He shot 39% from the field. His first year in the NBA.
Now here we are.
And now he's like 19, 12, and 7, shooting 60% from the field. Things can change, but you have to be able to put guys in position. And this is where I want to transition to Monty. the conversation now, when you talk to people about Monty, is he didn't want the job to begin with. He was offered more money and he eventually accepted the job. Does he really want to be there? All of these questions surface because of the losing. What is your perception of Monty, and what are your thoughts on those questions that are being asked currently?
No, for sure. I think you said the big thing because of the losing. Nobody was asking that when they were 2-1, right?
No one would. Yeah. And even if they were, if they had won 10 games,
nobody's asking that question.
No one's asking that. Like, all right, they're young and they've dealt with injuries and it's whatever. But because they've only won 2 and they lost 27 in a row, now it's like, well, obviously he doesn't want to be here. Obviously this is
I get it. It's, and to me, I think that's, I understand like why that is like the natural like online talking point, but like being around him every day, like the dude cares. Like, I'm not gonna sit here. Like, his eyes looked red to me the other night after Brooklyn. I'm not, I didn't see him cry, but his eyes looked redder than usual.
Yeah.
I watch him work with these guys after practice when we're allowed in the gym. The guy cares. Like, was money a big factor why he came here? Yeah, he told you that. He told everybody that. Like, of course it is. If somebody asked me right now to gave me $100 million to teach a yarn class, my heart wouldn't be in it, but I would do it. Like, I understand, like, money talks, right?
Yeah.
But I think he genuinely cares about this team. I think more so than anything, he cares about this group. Like, I think he genuinely likes the guys that are in that locker room, and he talks about that ad nauseum, like how hard they work and the type of people they are. And I think he also, and every sense I've gotten is like, yes, he got a lot of money, but I think he like feels like he needs to live up to that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think he just took it and like, oh, now it's their problem if it doesn't work out. Like, I think he thinks he needs to live up to that. And I think his biggest flaw to start is like, I think it was important for him to give everybody a clean slate. And I think he might have went a little too far with that.
Yeah. Like, in what way?
I understand like the tough love on Ivy. Like, I know Pistons fans were upset from day one, and I get it because he did show promise. But like, at the end of the day, we're talking about a guy who was the second best player on a team that won 17 games. Like, it's not like he like led the Pistons to the playoffs. Like, he had stuff he needed to figure out, and Monty more so than others like was tough on him because I think he sees something in him. I don't think it's because he super duper like dislikes him. I think he sees something. And I think he just like played that out too long. And like, you're seeing like maybe the effects of that from Jaden. I think because they have so many young guys and a lot of guys are in the same tier that he expanding his bench, was something that as time went on, we learned something he shouldn't do, and he's still doing it. Like, I mean, listen, Alec Burks fell off a cliff overnight. Like, that's insane. Like, to me, how he's been is like more shocking than the losing streak itself. Like, he was a bucket last year to start this year. Like, he's a professional scorer, and he's just been like the worst shooter in basketball. Like, I think legitimately the past 2 months. But I think like giving guys a little longer rope than he probably should.
Specifically, who is he giving a longer rope, would you say?
I understand playing Killian because of the turnover issues, right? Like, at least Killian takes care of the ball. But even like what Killian does well, like, does it help you get over that hump at this point? I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
Alec Burks, again, like, I still believe there's just going to be a day we wake up and he's back to being Alec Burks. But we're not talking about Alec Burks has just like struggled the last 3 games. It's been like a month and a half, 2 months. The wise, like, going back and forth between Wiseman and Bagley.
Yeah.
Is weird. Like, I would almost like, if you're gonna, like, if you're dead set on starting Durant and Stu, like, make Stu the backup five.
Yeah.
Like get him out sooner and make him the backup five.
Yeah.
Like, I think he's just been a little slow to figure out his team.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest issue for me.
Yeah. I mean, that makes some sense to me. What are the thoughts right now on that James Wiseman trade? Like, obviously, like, it looks bad. Yeah. He doesn't look like a player. He doesn't look like somebody that's even going to be their backup just because he doesn't defend. And if you're that big and you don't defend, there's just not a real place for you in the league unless you are some elite offensive center. And he's not that either. Like, what are the returns looking like on that as of today?
So I want to, like, I don't want to sit here and, like, act like in the way I feel about it now is the way I should have felt about it when it happened or when it did happen. I just want to say I understand why they did it.
Mm-hmm.
Even if the effects are lingering to now where it's like it's not the most cohesive roster and they've lost a bunch of games because of that, and it's like you worry about losing seeping into the building. But
yeah,
they weren't going to re-sign Sadiq Bey for the number he wanted. To my knowledge, even at like him and Atlanta didn't reach an agreement. I think I had heard that they offered him like 4 for $75 and he said no to that. So okay. It's like, it's very clear that he thinks he's going to get more if what I heard was true.
Okay.
So in Detroit's case, it's like they lost Cade for the season in December, really November. They just essentially said we're punting on this season in terms of like collective development.
Mm-hmm.
And they did another season of individual development. And with that, they decided to take a swing. As we talked about earlier, they had really no assets to start the rebuild. So they're in, like, let's get these guys and see if we can, like, refurbish them. And, like, I understand that logic, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to understand. I understand the trade. Like, listen, Sadiq Bey, does he help this team now? Yeah, of course. Like, he's a better fit for this team. But it's not like they traded a guy who's the best player on a playoff team or something like that, or the second or third. Like, the Atlanta stinks.
Yeah.
But it's more so of a roster construction thing. But I understand trying to, like, take swings to build up assets. Like, what if it works out with Wiseman in a change of scenery? I get the logic. But where I don't get it is why, like, when you have – and, again, they signed Bagley not knowing Wiseman would be available. Like,
right.
I'm sure those two things – yeah. But then they see the opportunity for Wiseman. They're like, just do it. But they already have three centers on the roster at that point that they're trying to develop.
Yeah.
So it's like, from that standpoint, and I think that's the one that's really like carried over into this season. But yeah, I would be surprised if Wiseman is here next year.
Yeah. Before we go, let's talk about positive things. What are some positive things that have happened? Because I know the losing just makes everything look horrible, and it's like the only thing that people want to talk about.
Yeah,
but there are some positive things happening with this roster. Like, what are some things that you would point to?
I think the big one is Cade Cunningham, like, figuring things out.
Yeah.
Like, of course, like, the most important thing in this rebuild, I still think, is Cade, like, becoming a dude.
Yeah.
Like, things are still okay if he becomes a dude, no matter what it looks like now. And I think more and more he's looking like a dude. He led the league in turnovers. It was bad. He was averaging like over 4 a game. And now I think over the month of December, he only averaged 2.9.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
Like, that's a huge, like, when you have a guy that has that much usage, you're like fine with like 3 to 3.3. Like, you understand it.
Mm-hmm.
Four is where you get like nervous if this guy's a lead ball handler.
Sure.
So for him to get it down was huge. His 3-point shooting has gone up and down, but I feel much better about it now than I did his first 2 years. Even if the numbers don't suggest it. Listen, I know, what else can I, Jalen Duren, when he plays, just like him and Cade's connection as a lob threat is promising.
Mm-hmm.
Isaiah Stewart, whether or not people think he should be a backup big or not, like, I think his long-term role is like a backup big, like a solid one. And people say he only makes threes because he's open. Well, you know what? He's making them. He's shooting close to 40% on 3 attempts a game.
Yeah.
So it's good to have like that in your back pocket, even if that's long-term piece coming off the bench. I still think Asar is going to be great at some point.
Yeah, I do too.
I really do. And they have cap flexibility. Like, it's not all bad. Like, why? It was bad for the previous.
We got the cap flexibility a lot faster than I would have hoped.
I mean, listen, the issue. I understand it feels like hell right now for Pistons fans, and this feels like the worst it's ever been.
Yeah.
And the product technically is.
Yeah.
But what separates this iteration from the last iteration is they have interesting young guys and flexibility.
Yeah.
The last iterations had no interesting young guys and no flexibility.
True.
So you keep the door is still cracked, the light at the end of the tunnel is still there. It's just I truly believe once they get a win, they'll look a lot more like a normal bad basketball team.
Yeah.
They just have to get the win.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, I like a lot of the young players. It is just still baffling to me. Like, this is, when you look back at like all the rosters, it's like, man,
this is the
team that is doing it. I mean, the Pistons, yeah, since like 93 have never had a net rating below that's in the double digits, like in the negative double digits.
Yeah,
which is wild. They have never done it until this year.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, they're negative 11 right now, and they're not even the worst. The Spurs are still the worst.
Can I ask you a question really quick about the Spurs thing since we're on it?
Yeah.
Like, I know the Pistons and the Spurs ended up ending the losing streak, but like with all the talk around Wemby and everything, like, why do you think he's not like getting, like, I know his teammates like have not been great, but it's like, for all the love he got, like, why is he not getting more? Like, I felt like Cade was taking some punches there for a while. Like, why is Wemby not taking that when he's supposed to be the all world prospect? People hate the Pistons. I honestly think
it's not that they hate the Pistons. It's just that like what is happening in Detroit is just so jaw dropping that like there's not a whole lot of room in the conversation for other bad teams. Whenever, like, truly, I talked about this on Slam and Jam last week. We are in the midst of like historical bad teams right now.
There are like three or like, the funny thing is, if the Pistons win one, they're just a game behind the Spurs.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's not, they're really close. And in fact, they've had like statistically maybe having a worse season but they've won a couple other games. It's like the only difference. But the Spurs, the Pistons, and Hornets all have minus 10 or worse net ratings, there's never been three teams, and there's only been two teams once that have done that.
How close are the Wizards to that?
The Wizards are minus let me see where they're at today, but they were close. I think we're going to end up with at least two, which has only happened one other time. But I think that we're close to it being three, which has never ever happened. Which is funny. And Alex and I were talking about this. It's funny because this draft stinks. Like this is
so bad.
Like this is not the draft that you would want to have a top pick in.
No.
It's crazy. Okay, so we still have three.
I would trade it if I got number one.
Yeah, I would trade back. because you're going to make – it's going to look like a mistake because they were the number one pick, yeah. no matter what. San Antonio minus 12, which is really bad. It's not as bad as the historically horrible Bobcats from 12-13 who had minus 15. Yeah. Detroit's minus 11. Charlotte's minus 10. And the Wizards are minus 9.5. And then it drops off pretty significantly from there to the Blazers, who are minus 6. Utah is a minus 5.9. So it's really these four teams.
Yeah.
And there's never been a collection of teams with this bad of net rating. And some of it is like the rest of the league is just so competitive.
Yeah.
You know, there's mediocre teams, but in the past there's been a lot more mediocrity than there is today, where there is like there's some really good teams and then there's like really, really bottom of the barrel teams where like this could easily be Charlotte or San Antonio or the Wizards. Yeah.
It's literally separated by like a game, like two games, right? Like
two
it's
games
like
for the Spurs, three games from the Wizards. The Wizards are 5-25. You know, Charlotte's 7-21, which feels like a mountain to climb for the Detroit right now. But they could easily have the same record as the Spurs in 2 weeks.
Easily, yeah, like 100%. Like it wouldn't be far fetched for nobody to mention the Pistons again 2 weeks from now because they're just regular bad. Well, I don't even call that regular bad, but
I mean it's historically bad. Like all of these are historically bad, but because the Pistons did the 27 loss thing, like
100%.
Here we are. Go ahead.
I was just saying, the thing that's just like funny to me is like whenever I see the Spurs talked about, it's still like look what the cool things Wimby did. And I'm like, all right, well if he's as good as you all thought, like this shouldn't just be like pass. Like I don't care if he's a rookie, like it just shouldn't be as like passable as it is. Like he's still only averaging like 17 a game. Like I know he can't do it all himself, but like I don't know. It's weird to me how he's handled in comparison to like Cade.
I think it's like the shiny new toy thing still.
Yeah,
because like if it were Cade, that was the rookie, and he was doing some of the stuff he's doing now.
You're right.
People would be really excited about it, but because like we've seen Cade Cunningham, like we know what he's about. You know, I think that people think that way. And if Wimby in 2 years is winning, they go 2-27, I think the shine will come off of him quick.
You're probably right.
You know,
and I just want to put it on record. Chet should win Rookie of the Year. And if Wimby wins it, then we should figure out how we do voting.
I agree. I don't think you can be one of these historically bad teams and have any awards.
Not when the other guy is on one of the four best teams in the NBA.
Yeah, that dude.
They're so good.
These back-to-back home games for the Thunder, we don't need to necessarily go on a Thunder tangent, but being around the team and like seeing just like the joy they're playing with, the way they share the ball, and just like the dominance of Shea, Jalen Williams, and Chet is crazy. Like it's I would have never said that. I've been saying this for a while. Like I don't think the Thunder could ever get to the talent level of KD, Russ, and Harden. And I'm not saying that those guys are as good as KD, Russ, and Harden, but they fit better than KD, Russ, and Harden did. And like you can play them all on the court, and they accentuate one another. There was a play last night against the Knicks where Chet has a block. Shea gets the rebound.
Yeah.
J-Dub is the trailer. Dub swishes a three, and you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
Like that
They're
was
so good, man.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it's unfair how much better they can get because of all the picks. Like it's just
That's
like you talk about great fortune.
Yeah.
Like holy moly.
Yeah.
And it's a credit to Presti, like identifying the right guys and getting obviously somewhat lucky with Chet, but they also didn't have to take him. Like there was injury concerns or whatever. But I mean, listen. So when you think they're ready to cash in, do you think they cash in on a four or a five? Or they could do both.
I think they need like a big 3-4 that can
and have Chet play the five forever.
Yeah, and you can go get a backup five. Like if you really need somebody, but when Chet is the center, it unlocks everything for them.
It's night and day difference.
Because the floor spaces and like if Giddy can play, like if he's having a good game, it's great. If he doesn't, pull him, put in Isaiah Joe, put in Kason Wallace, whoever. You know, like they've it allows them so much flexibility as an offensive team because you can invert everything. You know, there, it's
who's the ideal 3-4 for you? Like, I mean, if you're going to, it's time to cash it in.
Cash in. I'm the worst person to ask this question to because I'm like, I in my brain, I can only think realistically. And like, I can't, like, Thunder fans are all talking about Larry Markkanen.
That would be perfect.
Which would be insane. One, it would take a lot. Like, I don't think Sam Presti can get off the phone with Danny Ainge and Jalen Williams not be a part of it. You know?
What about for 10 firsts?
10 firsts.
I would do it.
They have
maybe not 10.
They have 10. They could give them 5.
Yeah.
I
want to say on here, I think that's all smoke. I don't think Ainge trades Markkanen.
I don't think so.
I've talked to.
Yeah, I don't think so either. And I don't think the Thunder would trade for him either. The player that I think is relatively realistic, that wouldn't be as expensive, that would really help them because he is a little bit bigger, is Dorian Finney-Smith. Like, you plug him in at
the... Look at you being frugal.
I'm so frugal.
Like, you just like, maybe want to give up 2 seconds.
Two firsts. I actually think it would take a couple firsts to pry
for
him
Dorian?
Away. He plays a lot. He's really good. And he has a really reasonable contract. It's $13 million this year, $14 the year after, $15 after that.
If Robert Covington got traded like 3 times for 2 firsts, then probably Dorian Finney. Yeah, you're right.
It's the same concept. He is basically Robert Covington. Like, he's that kind of player.
Yeah. You know who I sneaky like?
Hmm.
Jeremy Grant.
For OKC?
Yeah. If he can.
The only thing that I worry about him.
His role.
Yeah, the only thing I worry about him is like he's a bad rebounder.
He is a bad rebounder. You're right.
And that is the thing that the Thunder struggle with the most. Like, that is, if you look at any deficiency, it's rebounding. They are bad. They're one of the worst rebounding teams in the league. And they're okay with that because it helps everything else boost, like, they're the best shooting team in the league. La Murray wrote that article. I don't know if you read it yesterday.
Yep.
But about shooting, and like, somehow the Thunder are like the best shooting team in the NBA. Well, it's because they have spacing from their five, you know?
Right.
And like, that's a big deal. I like the idea of a 6'9" forward like Jeremy Grant, you can't have that guy be like, he would be the worst rebounder on the team. Like, one of the worst. And you just can't have that. Fair.
Can I try to think of one more?
Yeah. Yeah. Here's my thing. Like, the Thunder are like really good now. And I think what they would want to do is to see them play in the playoffs.
That's what I was going to say. I wouldn't do a move until I find out how far this team can go.
That's why I'm
a year away from them making a move.
Yeah. I agree. Yes. I think like this summer, when you see like, oh, they lost in round one or round two or whatever to, because of these three reasons.
X, Y, and Z, right.
And if it's, you know, two of those reasons may be they're too young, they were shell-shocked, whatever it is, you know.
Yep.
And then the third one could be they got out-rebounded like crazy by somebody. Yeah. Then, like, great, now we know for sure, and you can go fix it, you know, because you do have the picks and you do have young guys that would be attractive to other teams, and, you know, you can keep your top three and then play around with the rest of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, you got another one?
Fascinating. I would love, I don't know how this would work because you said 3-4, and I don't know how good you would feel about making just Chet the 4.
Mm-hmm.
But what about like Jared Allen?
Yeah, Jared Allen's one that gets brought up. I think that he, so because like you're playing Dort and you're playing Giddey, I think it's hard to play with a non-shooting big. You know
what
I mean?
Even if the other four can shoot?
But the other four really can't. Like, nobody... Dort's shot the ball really well this year, but he's not... No one guards him. Like, he didn't bend the defense. Same with Giddey.
Right. Well, I guess I'm saying, like... So, at this point, if you get Jared Allen, I'm going Jared Allen, Chet, Jalen, Shea, and then you find a different... Like, I'm saying a different three.
Yeah.
Or maybe you start Isaiah Joe.
You could. I don't know if I love it. Just because I think the mix that they have right now, like, they're all They're all fast. They're all fast thinkers. They move the ball like they do. They just fly up and down the court, and teams get the quality of shots that they get right now is unbelievable.
Oh, I got one.
Okay,
Miles Turner.
If Miles Turner was available, that would be an interesting one. But the football's been pulled from me too many times on Miles Turner.
He
would be great because he does space the floor. He's just like catch and shoot, defends the rim. That one I think would be interesting. Dude, I am so frugal. Like I'm thinking about Dorian Finney-Smith and Kelly Olynyk. Like those are the guys that I'm thinking about.
Hey, listen, I think those would be two like let's do those now.
Yeah.
And see what that looks like in the playoffs and then we upgrade if we need to.
Yeah. I think you could do those both for relatively inexpensive. And like that both those guys, I think you feel pretty comfortable with both those guys being in your playoff rotation.
I agree.
You know, and then like you go figure it out, and you also have like the because you are good, you can be patient and wait. Like, hey, wait for the perfect guy to come on the market, and then you can just overpay to get whoever it is that you want. I think that,
or maybe that guy comes up in a draft.
Yeah. I mean, they're gonna have
in a draft.
They're gonna have picks in this next draft. You know, and this
Alex Sarr.
Hey, they already have his brother on the team. They're already into Sarrs. When the Thunder do blowout teams, I call Olivier Sarr the Victory Sargar. So
that's good. I haven't heard you say that. That's good.
That's the thing I'm most proud of this season. I think is the Sargar.
No, your content has been A1, but that's good though. That shouldn't be that high on the list, but that is good.
It's pretty high for me. Hey, go read James Edwards. A lot of people say, oh, I feel sorry for James. I actually don't feel sorry for James at all because somebody has to cover these teams. And if it's somebody who's not very good, it just makes the experience even worse. But because it's somebody that's fantastic, like I do want to read about the Pistons. Like I do want to read all the stuff that you do. So go read James Edwards because he's very good. Tell us about your podcast. If people are super interested in listening to a Detroit Pistons podcast, tell them about it.
Well, first and foremost, thank you for the kind words. You've always been a great supporter and friend, so it means a lot. Yes, check me out at The Athletic. I'm on Twitter, JL Edwards III. My podcast with Vincent Goodwill, NBA columnist, Yahoo Sports. He's from Detroit as well. We have a podcast called the Detroit Players Podcast. It's on Patreon. Just $4 a month. We drop every Monday, and then on Fridays we do a bonus episode where it's like I'll upload audio from a one-on-one I did that week or a long time ago that I think you guys would like to listen to, or I'll upload a collection of audios from after a game if it's a monumental game or throughout the week. Just there's usually two pods a week, one normal pod, which is me and Vinny, and then Friday is like a hodgepodge of quotes, so you can hear like behind the scenes of the job and just the questions asked and things like that. That's on Patreon. It's just $4 a month, and once you're a Patreon, there's a way to like only listen on Apple or Spotify or whatever. You just have to be a Patreon first, so check that out.
Go check it out. You can go get The Athletic right now for $1 a month for a year if you go to theathletic.com/NBA show. It's a great deal. You should lock that in, and also stay locked in to everything at The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.